Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, June 14th, 2022. I'm on your host, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is the force that is Gary Whitta.
Good morning. Oh my God, I just took the first sip of this foul.
Oh no.
This was a mistake.
What is that?
It's a new, I've got it in a flask, so you can't see, but I've still got the empty can here. So it's a new kind of energy drink. I'm not endorsing this at all. Far from it, I think, based on my first sip. It's a new kind of energy drink called Ghost. And I was compelled by it because it's Warhead's sour watermelon flavor.
Oh God! Oh! I don't know how I feel about that.
I don't know
what
I was thinking.
That can looks like the energy drink that turned everybody into zombies in Sunset Overdrive. Yeah. That's what that can looks like.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like a energy drink from a movie.
Do you feel like you're going ghost right now, Gary?
Gary, does Gary even know what going ghost means?
No, he does.
What does that mean?
That's
going
a Danny
ghost?
Phantom reference. Bless, good job on saying the force that is Gary Whitta. That was a good moment.
Of course. I mean, that's what I originally started calling Gary Whitta when I first joined KF. But like, the sad thing is, I rarely ever get to host with Gary, and so I rarely ever get to use that moniker for Gary.
It's a rare treat for both of us.
Exactly. Gary, how are you doing this morning?
Yeah, good. Yeah, I actually woke up. I had a rough day yesterday. I had a day. There was just too much going on. I felt really overwhelmed. I just wanted to, like, I only live like three blocks from the ocean. And every now and again, I just want to, like, walk into the ocean and not come back. Well, and yesterday was one of those days. But despite all of that, I woke up in a good mood this morning.
Well, hell yeah. I got to appreciate your Mario shirt. It's funny because I'm wearing my Sonic shirt, so I feel like we're matching. We're not matching.
Oh yeah, look at that. We've got Mario and Sonic.
So, yeah, someone in the chat was like, love the console war t-shirt.
That is a complete accident.
Back to Sega versus Nintendo.
I've been playing a lot of Super Mario. Not, I keep calling it this, but I've been playing a lot of the new Mario Strikers.
And are you liking
that? I gotta say, I'm very much enjoying it.
I just downloaded it yesterday. I didn't get to play it at all during.
We got to play. We got to team up and play. You know, Snow White Mike's playing as well.
Is it even possible to team up? Because we learned the hard way on Friday. It's like Nintendo like really wants to make that as hard as possible.
No, I mean, I didn't have any trouble playing with a friend of mine over the weekend. So the thing that I think it's missing is, so you know, it's like five aside, right? But so four outfield players. The goalie is CPU controlled. And you can play solo against another solo player or the CPU or whatever. And you can play, and you can team up with one friend. So two of you are on the team. But what you cannot do, which I feel like would be great if they would let you do it, is have 4-on-4. So each of you control your own individual play,
kind
of like
FIFA
pro clubs. Yeah. They don't let you do that. It's weirdly, playing cooperatively is more confusing than playing solo, right? Because you're always aware of like who you are when you're playing. You only control one player at a time, but you always are kind of aware of who that is. When you're playing cooperatively with another player, like, it's just an extra layer of like, wait, is that me or is that the other player? It takes like an extra half second to kind of for it to click. But if you were playing 4-on-4, then you always know like, oh, I'm Luigi or I'm Donkey Kong or whatever. So I'm really hoping that they add that, because it feels like an obvious thing that they missed.
Who would have thought that like Nintendo would
put
4v4 multiplayer into their 4v4
video
soccer game. Bless, we learned it the hard way on Friday's stream. I know you were off having fun playing games at Summer Game Fest, but like, you should check out the VOD for that, Bless, because it's just like, you see Mike crash in real time of like us like being like pumped up to play a new like Mario Sports game, and then like over the course of like 10 minutes us realizing, I'm just like, oh, it doesn't have this, oh, it doesn't have this, oh, we can squat up here, oh, but that service isn't working right now, and just like
Nintendo,
oh, it was rough. I felt really bad for Mike.
It's funny because Gary, for you, like as a soccer fan, how are you taking to it? Because I know for me, I love FIFA. FIFA's my favorite sports game franchise, and hopping in yesterday, I had the realization that this game was gonna be a little bit more on the party chaotic, like I'm knocking down characters side of things, as opposed to like the strategic. If I am playing, because I played a lot of FIFA 2v2 growing up, right? And like the fun of that was being able to click with somebody and have it be that, oh, they know when to go on the run, right? Like they know,
right. Oh, yeah, take for off, sure.
You know, I get that through pass. They get we thread it perfectly and they get the goal. I don't know if I'm gonna have that in Mario Strikers, and so I'm concerned.
It's gonna take a minute to click. When I first started playing over the weekend, it took me a minute to get used because there's a lot of buttons, right? It's not just like pass and shoot, but like lob, tackle. You know, there's like, you know, dash, use item. There's a lot of buttons, and it can for a minute I was like, you know, you have that like panicky thing where like you're mashing every button. You don't quite have it yet, but then there's a moment where it clicks. And you are pulling off those combos and you are scoring goals like the way you want to score them. And it's really, okay, really satisfying when you do that. It also makes you rage a lot. It's got exactly the same thing that all the other Mario, you know, racing sports party games have, which is like just completely unfair bullshit that like just drops on you items all the time. It's very chaotic. I wouldn't even really call it soccer. It's more like in the game, they don't even call it soccer. They call it, the name of the game they play is called Strike. That's why you're strikers. So it's a totally different sport. The only, you know, there's a goal at each end and you kick the ball, but you can also like Donkey Kong and Bowser and Wario, they'll pick up the ball and throw it. Like there's no fucking rules at all, as far as I can tell. And given that so much of it is based on like really hard tackles and combat and like, you know, they call it Battle League for a reason, right? It actually reminds me more of like, if you remember a game called Speedball, or like, but it's more like a kind of like a combat future sport where like, you know, your teams are wearing like heavy armor and they're smacking each other and grabbing the ball. It's more combat oriented, but I don't know. So far I'm really, really enjoying it. I've been making my way through the cup tournaments. I won my second cup last night and had a blast doing it. Like it's definitely the kind of game where you're like, you know, you're either raging or cheering at the TV. It's pushing all the right buttons for me so far. And even though I'm never going to get there, what I'm hearing about it, and what I'm, because I'm talking to a couple of friends who like compete at a much higher level at these type of games, that, you know, like pro players. And they're saying that it's very similar to something like Rocket League, where like there's, if you're willing and able to get good at it, there is a very, very high skill ceiling.
Really?
I imagine like at the pro level, at the esports level, it could end up being quite popular.
I wish it was at that level of Rocket League, but like, as you already mentioned, Gary, the goalies are AI controlled and that's not something that you can like really switch. So it doesn't really feel consistent on like what strategies you're trying to pull off to like get like shots in and stuff like that. Whereas like Rocket League, like you can choose to be the goalie and stuff, or even like lead the goal and stuff. Yeah. Like
well,
that.
But I mean, there is no designated goalie in Rocket League, right? Yeah. You can just choose to play like sweeper and like stay at the back.
But it gives you that access, like if you are playing at a higher level, to actually like be the goalie and decide like I'm gonna hang back, you two go forward and stuff like that.
I don't know. Someone will correct me. Maybe this is a good one for you or wrong, but I don't know if there's ever been like a soccer simulation, like a soccer game, that gives you manual control over the goalkeeper in anything other than like a penalty situation, because they've never really figured out how to do it. Like goalkeepers have usually always been on auto, right?
It's always been bad though. Like FIFA has had, I remember certain iterations toward the early 2010s where that was the whole gimmick, is like, oh yeah, play as the goalie, you know, control the dives and all that stuff, and it never worked. And I don't even know if they still have that stuff in modern. I'm sure they probably give you the choice, but it was never something that actually worked to the full extent where it actually made it fun. I will say the thing about Rocket League, though, that I do like regarding that is that Rocket League is a game that has zero like chance to it, right? Like Rocket League is all
skill.
That's
the thing.
It's all physics. You don't have to worry about any AI or any item or any, you know, ulterior thing coming through.
Yeah, there's no banana skins or red shells or anything. But in Battle League, right? This is why ultimately, so I predicted this wrong when Fall Guys was first blowing up, and there were tournaments. I actually competed in a couple of tournaments. That I thought that Fall Guys was going to be big on the esports scene, and in the end, it wasn't. And the reason why is because there's just too many random factors, right? Pro players want to feel like they win or lose based purely on merit, not because of like some bullshit luck scenario. And Fall Guys, like part of the fun of the chaos for casual players is all of the random stuff that can happen to you. And it's great for like rage video compilations and stuff like that. But esports players don't want to feel like it's why they took the team games out, is that people that want to, like the tryhards and the sweaties, want to feel like they're succeeding or failing based on their own merit. So they don't like it when they get thrown into like a random squad in a team game in Fall Guys. And that's ultimately why I think Fall Guys didn't kind of sustain itself at kind of the esports, the kind of the competitive level. And you may be right about Battle League as well. Even though it's got a high skill ceiling, it does have those random factors with the shells and stuff. And that might be what holds it back ultimately.
I would love for it to get to that level. I think the other thing is just that Nintendo for some reason just hates esports.
They don't support it at all, right? Like if anything, yeah, they're hostile to like the Smash Brothers scene.
Super Smash Brothers should be the biggest esport in the world. And Nintendo does everything possible to make sure that it isn't. And why do you think that is?
It's such a weird stance on Nintendo's part, right? Right?
I think they don't want to scare people. I think they don't want to scare people away because they see Smash Brothers as being this party game, this family game, this game that they want to have a broad audience. And so the more hardcore they make it, the more they're scared of the idea that people get dissuaded into buying it if they're not a big Smash Brothers person. I do think that's bullshit, though. Like, I don't think that matters. You know, you look at other fighting games, like Street Fighter is such a high-selling fighting game, and that's one that that also does have a high skill ceiling. Like, you look at, like, Tekken or Mortal Kombat especially, right? I think Mortal Kombat is probably the one that's under Smash Brothers in terms of sales numbers, and I think they kind of go back and forth depending on the releases.
It's funny, because, you know, Nintendo is the company that brought us the Nintendo World Championships, right? Like, the original esports tournament, right? The one that we still kind of legendarily talk about decades later and was kind of the blueprint for like all the, you know, competitive live, you know, esports and gaming events that would follow. It might be, you know what I think it probably is like there's always some controversy kicking off in the fighting game community, right? Like, it's, I mean, there's toxicity, there's drama, there's controversy. Maybe just Nintendo just don't want to, they just don't want any of that.
They are making strides, though. Like, the latest partnership they made was with an organization called Panda Global, and they're big in the fighting game community. And they've hit up a deal with them to where now Panda Global can run official Smash Brothers tournament events.
Okay.
And so they're doing some things that are good. And that was a recent update in that sphere. But overall, like, Nintendo is just known for, like, not playing well with others in that regard. But I hope it opens up. I hope they get better. But for now, Gary, I'd love to continue this conversation with you in the post-show because I just enjoy talking about video games.
Get a copy of Strikers and we should play. You'll enjoy it.
I got it downloaded. Dude, I'm 100% down to play it.
All right, let's play it for sure.
For sure. Gary, for now, let's talk about today's stories, which include a quick recap of that Capcom showcase, what is up with Assassin's Creed, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code Kinda Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be a part of the show, to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, or bronze members or above, get to write in. And silver members or above, get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you, a new episode of the Kinda Funny Games Cast is now live, wrapping up our time at Summer Game Fest Play Days, playing Sonic Frontiers, Cuphead DLC, and more. You can catch that right now on youtube.com/kindafunnygames and on podcast services around the globe.
And it is actually up because we had some problems earlier this morning and it went down, so it is back up on YouTube.
I want to check in with you on Sonic Frontiers, by the way, Blessing. You got the t-shirt. I know you're the Sonic expert. I want to pick your brains on that a little bit.
I mean, you can ask me the question right now. What do you want to know?
So, as it stands right now, what's the bottom line on Sonic Frontiers? Because I'm very confused. I've seen all of these first looks, these previews, whatever, these early looks, these hands-on, and it's all over the map. I'm seeing a lot of like, this could revolutionize. This could be like the next step that Sonic needs. It's going to a new level. But then I'm hearing like it's janky, it's weird, like it's not as good as you think it is. Like the reactions I've seen are all over the place. So I'm trying to like distill that down. Give me the bottom line on it, Blessing.
That was my big takeaway from Summer Game Fest Play Days. Of course, I got to talk to a number of people that got their hands on Sonic Frontiers, including folks like Jake Baldino, SkillUp, Imran Khan. And my favorite thing, talking to all these different people who, like, I respect all their opinions, right? Like, these are some of the people who I go to specifically to hear their video game opinions and understand, like, what's good and what's not. Everybody had a different takeaway. Right. Some people absolutely hated it. Some people absolutely loved it. Like people whose opinions I trust both landed on both sides of this is the worst. This is great. And this is like, it's fine. I had a really fun time with it. I think the demo that I got 30 minutes to actually play the game. The 30 minutes I spent playing the game, I played a good game. I think that game is actually pretty solid. I think it's coming together really well. I had a good time with it. It reminds me of playing Mario Odyssey, where you're in a big open level and you are exploring the way you want to explore. You're seeing a platform in the distance going, oh, let me see where that takes me. And you're finding a heart.
Or
you're
seeing a rail. So is it more Odyssey than, because the comparisons I kept hearing was more like Breath of the Wild, like a Zelda game.
It's the gameplay loop of Mario Odyssey with some of the stylistic choices of Breath of the Wild. Okay. You know, like, you're in this big lush forest environment. It's a lot of chill piano music. A lot of the UI reminded me of Breath of the Wild stuff. Like, there's a stamina bar that looks like it was taken directly out of Breath of the Wild.
Okay.
And I think they're trying to invoke some of that, but I don't know if it's going to be as open as Breath of the Wild. You know, I think it is going to be more along the lines, especially in terms of gameplay, as a Mario Odyssey, where your whole goal is to just collect the collectibles. I think that's mainly what it's going to be. It's not going to be the, you know, you're picking in quests, you're not going to meet characters, you're not going to, it seems like there are shrine-like moments. You know, in IGN's preview of it, they talk about if you find an in-world boss, you can fight the boss, take out the boss. If you take out the boss, you get a key. If you collect enough keys, you then get to unlock a linear Sonic level. That seems like it's almost like an unlocked shrine.
I get the difference, right? The Mario as it exists today, like in the Odyssey era, and Zelda now in the Breath of the Wild era, are both open world games, right? They both look like games where you can run around at will and go where you want, and you can. But like Breath of the Wild is truly open world, right? Whereas games like Odyssey now are more like, it's open. There's an open arena, but it's still ultimately a course that you have to go through, right?
Yeah.
You've got to jump through all the right hoops. Sonic's more like that.
Kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. I believe they never called Sonic Frontiers open world, as opposed, except for in the leaks and in like the reports about it. I don't think Sega's officially said open world. They have officially said open zone. And so, like, in my gameplay, I only got access to that first zone, which is the lush green forest area. The vibe I get is that, like, there will be a doorway or transition or, like, some kind of, like, separator between the zone that I'm in and then when I get to the next zone, which is, like, the open level. I think it is going to be more Mario Odyssey than Breath of the Wild, but I don't know that to be a fact. It seems like they've not said it's open world.
So given that these predictions are all over the map, and it seems like even having played it, you're as kind of confused as I am in terms of how this is all going to shake out. What's your prediction as it stands right now? When this game ships, is this going to be the second coming of Sonic as some are predicting, or is it going to disappoint as others are predicting?
I think for Sonic fans, it's going to be a good time. If you're somebody that does not like Sonic and you've never really fucked with a 3D Sonic game, you're not going to enjoy it.
Okay.
That's been my takeaway from it. The one thing I will say, a thing that I didn't really dig about it, is that the technical stuff and the polish doesn't seem to be all the way there yet. It reminds me of when we originally got that Halo Infinite reveal at that Xbox showcase, and everybody saw it and went, oh, this doesn't look as populated and as pretty as I wanted to look for an Xbox Series X game. That's kind of the deal I get with it, where I want them to delay it. I think if they give it some time, it can shape up and be not only a fun game, but a game that looks pretty, a game that I think has more TLC put in there in terms of like actual pretty things to look at in the levels and shit to do, right? Like, I think it needs a lot of that kind of polish, and I think that might take a year or so to actually do. So I would love to see them delay it. That's my other takeaway from it, is like, you don't have to release this game this year. Just take your time with it.
Yeah, because on the one hand, if someone says, oh, but it's janky, that's the thing that worries me the least, because I'm thinking, well, it's an early demo, like tightening the screws and polishing up the technical aspects and making it not janky. Like, that's all the stuff. Like, if someone says, oh, there's a fundamental problem with the gameplay, or it's just not fun or whatever, that's a problem. But if someone's saying like, oh, it looks early, then great. Well, yeah, it is early. Like, they'll fix that. At the same time, though, I've seen Sonic games ship that are janky as fuck, so there's no,
that's the thing that scares me, is that they don't give a fuck. If the game doesn't come together by November or whenever, I forget if they actually announced a date or not, but like if the game doesn't come together, I have a feeling that they just say fuck it, they'll just ship it anyway, because they're Sega and Sonic is gonna sell anyway, right? Like, Sonic always sells pretty good. But hey, we shall see. For now, let's get back into housekeeping. That Xbox and Bethesda Extended Showcase is going down. And if you're wondering where our impressions are of that, have no fear. Kind of Funny XCast will be breaking that down in their episode this week, so look out for that in the regular locations. The Kind of Funny TikTok has a ton of previews from Summer Game Fest, including Street Fighter 6, Cuphead, The Delicious Last Course, and WrestleQuest. Make sure to follow at Kind of Funny Games on TikTok. Then remember, we've got a Corey spoiler cast up right now on the Gamescast feed, where we go through our different decisions to see how our various stories played out. That is me, that is Greg, that is Mike, and that is Joey. And that's up right now on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and on the Gamescast podcast feed. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Gordon McGuire and Fargo Brady. Today we're brought to you by Shopify and Athletic Greens, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is, and forever will be, the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have six stories today.
A Baker's Dozen.
Starting with our number one, I want to do a quick recap of yesterday's Capcom showcase. But then, Gary, I want to ask you the question. Who won Summer Game Fest 2022? All right. Sit on that. Think on that. Let me recap yesterday. Right. This comes from Adam Bankhurst at IGN. The Capcom Showcase has arrived, and it revealed a ton of new details for games previously announced. While there weren't any new game announcements, we did finally learn about the long-awaited Resident Evil Village story DLC, Shadows of Rose. We saw gameplay of Resident Evil 4 Remake, and we were treated to new looks at Exoprimal and Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak. Oh, and we found out we will soon be able to play as Lady Dimitrescu in Resident Evil Village's Mercenaries mode. Going down the list, right, this isn't in chronological. This is, I think, just ordered by how IGN wanted to do, which I think is just biggest announcement to the smallest. So starting off, right, Resident Evil 4 Remake, we received a few more seconds of gameplay, and it also may have revealed a major new addition to this updated version, the ability for Leon Kennedy to move while aiming his gun. We're also told the game will feature, quote, modern flourishes, and that the Ganado have been completely redesigned. Capcom has finally revealed Shadows of Rose, Resident Evil Village's long-awaited story DLC. The new story will follow Ethan Winter's daughter, Rose, and will serve as a sequel of sorts to the main campaign. Unlike the main game, Shadows of Rose will take place from a third-person perspective, and we'll see Rose entering the consciousness of the Mega Myceet, a place where time and space are warped beyond recognition. The Shadows of Rose story DLC will be released on October 28th, 2022, as part of Winter's expansion DLC. Resident Evil Village's Winter's expansion will also add the Mercenaries' additional orders, which, among other things, will let players finally play as Lady Alcina Dimitrescu. Chris Redfield and Carl Heisenberg will also be joining Mercenaries, and each will play in their own unique way. And the Resident Evil Village is currently only playable in first-person mode, but that will all change later this year when a new third-person mode will be added as part of Winter's expansion. This new way to play Resident Evil Village will let players see the game from a whole new perspective, complete with new animations and more. Resident Evil 2 Remake, Resident Evil 3 Remake, and Resident Evil 7 will all be getting free next-gen upgrades for PS5 and Xbox Series X today, yesterday, technically, June 13th. These updates will add support for 4K, high frame rate, ray tracing, and 3D audio. And then Resident Evil Reverse, the multiplayer game originally set to launch alongside Resident Evil Village, will officially launch on October 28th, 2022. Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak is a massive expansion to the Switch and PC exclusive Monster Hunter Rise, and a new trailer at Capcom Showcase revealed more details, and that it will be getting a demo on June 14th, which is today. Exoprimal, Capcom's upcoming co-op dinosaur murder action game, has received a new gameplay trailer and the promise of a closed network test before its launch in 2023. And then while we didn't learn anything new about Street Fighter 6, it was revealed that we will be getting more details on the next entry in the legendary fighting game franchise before the end of the year. Lastly, while we didn't learn anything new about... Oh, actually, no, this is the same thing copied and pasted. So that was the last thing. Gary Whitta, did you get a chance to check out the Capcom Game Showcase?
No, because it was yesterday, right? And like I said, yesterday was kind of a write-off for me. I had my head down the whole day. So I need you to catch me up on it. What did they show at the Capcom Showcase?
I mean, everything I just said, it wasn't that good. If I'm being real, right? It felt like just a standard, hey, here's another Capcom Game Showcase. You've already seen the bulk of this stuff, right? Like Street Fighter 6 appeared at State of Play. Resident Evil 4 also appeared at State of Play. I think the big things were...
So it was all a bunch of stuff that we knew about already, right?
A bunch of stuff that we knew about. And like the exciting things were Resident Evil Village DLC and then RE2 Remake, RE3 Remake, and Resident Evil 7 coming to modern platforms.
But no shockers like new Mega Man or something,
no,
right? Like
absolutely not. Yeah, it is what it is. Like, does any of that stuff excite you? Do you like Resident Evil?
As you were talking, the third person Resident Evil 8 actually sounded good to me, because my wife and I like to play those games. We haven't got around to it yet, but it's still installed on my Xbox. Every time I need to like juggle space on my Xbox, I'm like, no, don't uninstall that, because I know we're going to get to it soon. But now I think we might wait for that, because my personal preference is I like the third person Resident Evil games more than I like the newer first person one. So if they're adding not like some janky mod or something, but like an official third person mode, that might be a good incentive to finally jump in and play through it.
Yeah, the third person mode has me curious, because I was not expecting them to make this move, you know, putting Resident Evil Village, the OG game in third person. I'm not somebody who has their like ear to the forums and the Reddits for Resident Evil specifically. So I didn't know if that was like a fan outcry thing of a highly requested feature. But that's one that I think is really interesting. I didn't love Resident Evil Village enough to go back and replay it again just for this mode. I did like Resident Evil Village enough though to play the DLC. Like the Shadow of Rose stuff is cool. And that's another one that's in third person. And my immediate thought when they started talking about the third person stuff is like, are you guys done with first person? Like, is this an official feature or an additional feature? Or is this, when Resident Evil 9 comes out, it's going to be a third person? I was shocked to see them make that transition in the modern games.
What do you think about the multiplayer stuff? Because you don't typically think multiplayer when you think Resident Evil, do you? You think story campaign, you think story mode.
when I think of good Resident Evil, I think single player campaign mode, but most players seems like a thing they've really been trying to push for like the last two decades that has rarely ever hit. Like, I want to say there was maybe one or two of the multiplayer iterations that people actually liked, but I think there's been way more that just that hasn't hit. I'm surprised that they're pushing out both, or they're trying to promote both RE:Verse, which was supposed to come out a year ago, and somehow has gotten delayed a year and a half. Now they're pushing that here, and they're also pushing Resident Evil Mercenaries, which is another additional thing. Like, it feels like a lot for me. It's not something that gets me interested, though.
I don't know if this is what they're planning, but it seems like if they are going to bring Resident Evil into that multiplayer space, now is potentially a good time to do it, because we've seen this big explosion in the last couple of years of, like, you know, this particular new genre of like asymmetrical horror, right? Dead by Daylight, Evil Dead now, where, you know, one player is the killer and, you know, everyone else is like, is trying to survive. And I don't know if this is anything like what they're planning, but I could imagine like the Resident Evil universe mapping onto that, where like one player is like Lady Dimitrescu or whatever, and everyone else is like running around trying not to get fucking killed by her or whatever.
What would the correct move be for them to try and make something like this from the ground up, like they're doing with RE:Verse, or like would you just give that stuff to Dead by Daylight and have it be a? Because I believe Dead by Daylight.
Yeah, because you can do that as well, right? Like Dead by Daylight is like that, the Fortnite of horror now, right? Like, oh, Freddy Krueger's in here now, and Jason and the girl from The Ring, and
yeah, like put Nemesis in deals. There. Put Mr. X in there. KindofFunny.com/you'rewrong. If
Mr. X would be good,
there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like I think that'd be an awesome thing, and you get to have your cake and eat it too, right? You have a good game that is that kind of game, and then you get to have your IP in there and hopefully make those profits off of that as well. Yeah, people are saying Dead by Daylight already has a Tyrant in there.
Okay. They're way ahead of us.
And so they are doing that stuff, right? And I'd say, yo, spread the love. You know, if Dead by Daylight has that stuff, like what are the other games in that space that you can strike those partnerships with to get your characters in there? I'd rather that than for them to keep trying and keep failing with the multiplayer Resident Evil stuff.
I'm just trying to, I don't know much about it. I'm trying to figure out like what this new iteration of Resident Evil multiplayer is going to look like. Because it can't just be running around like killing each other, right? There's got to be something that gives it a different flavor.
Barrett, you brought up gameplay just a second ago for it looked like RE:Verse. Refresh me a little bit. In chat, you can refresh me too. I believe RE:Verse is like it is that asymmetric one person is playing as a nemesis type figure, and they're basically the dungeon master fucking up the other four players. So, something along those lines. Am I right about that, chat? Let me know. Because, yeah, like, Gary, do you see the gameplay that's up right now?
They barely showed anything, so I can't even, like...
Fucking Resident Evil.
That was literally all I showed was all they showed, so it's like, I couldn't tell you.
I'm looking at chat right now. It's a mastermind where you can control monsters. No, that's Resistance. Well, people are saying I'm describing Resistance. Gotcha. All right, I'll look up RE:Verse and remind myself of what the pitch for that thing was. I just remember the pitch not being that great. But, I mean, Gary, for a second, let's step away from Resident Evil. I asked you at the beginning of this, who won Summer Game Fest 2022?
I mean, I hesitate to try and make any kind of like authoritative judgment on it because I didn't see everything. I saw most of it, but like I said, yes, I didn't see the Capcom thing yesterday. I don't know. Like ever since the days at E3, this is a question that rolls around. Like, who were the big winners and losers? And I've been around long enough to remember that. Yeah, certainly there have been years when, you know, there's like a standout winner, like, oh, this was the game of E3, or this company, their presentation with their lineup clearly won E3. And we've seen that has happened over the years. And other years, there hasn't been like a clear standout or a clear winner. And I feel like this is one of those years. I mean, you tell me if you think I'm wrong, but like from everything that I saw, there wasn't any one thing in Summer Game Fest this year that totally blew me away. And I feel like there probably wasn't, because that's not the media narrative that I'm seeing. I'm not seeing like people coalescing around a clear winner or like one game that or one presentation that stood above the rest. It all just kind of felt like a bit of a muchness to me. It was like, I think what it indicates is overall the state of gaming is very healthy, and there's all kinds of really great stuff coming down the pipe. The next couple of years of, you know, for video gamers are going to be great, just like the last couple of years have. But this is a great time to be interested in video games. But in terms of if you want to make it like a horse race, I don't think there was a clear winner this year. Tell me if I'm wrong.
No, I mean, I think you're spot on. You know, I think there are the easy ones to point to, like Xbox, because the Xbox showcase was really good. But that's also another one where I don't know if it was their best showcase of all time. Like, I feel like I came out of this showcase maybe a little bit less excited than I have for some previous showcases in the past. And part of that is, you know, they did the thing where they were like, yo, let's focus on the next 12 months, which is good for them, setting one, coloring in what the next year of content looks like. on Xbox, and then also setting in those expectations of, we don't have Everwild to show. We do not have Hellblade to show. We do not have these games that you know exist that are upcoming in the future, the next Wolfenstein, the next Indiana Jones, that type of thing. We don't have that stuff to show just yet. Let's just focus on the near future. And I think them limiting themselves to that really helped them have a showcase that felt strong by that criteria. But even still, I think the biggest game, the biggest game out of that was Starfield. We got to see way more Starfield. Right. And I came out of Starfield going, oh, hell yeah, I'm excited for a new Bethesda Game Studios game. But it's also not the wildest thing since sliced bread. It's not fucking blowing me away. It looks like another Bethesda game, which has me excited, but also isn't blowing me away.
I mean, again, the reaction that is coming out of Starfield very much mirrored my own. It was very mixed, right? Some people are really psyched for it. A lot of people were like, really? That's it? I don't know. And again, we'll know, you know, it's so hard to say we'll know when we see it. But I kind of felt like a little bit, like I did when they did that first Halo Infinite reveal that blew up in their face. So I was like, really? Like, okay. I mean, yeah, it looks like a Halo game, but like, it doesn't look particularly next gen to me. And you know, this ain't it. And, I'll talk about like the whole thing in a minute, but like Starfield in particular, like, I don't get me wrong. Fucking day one, I'm going to play it. And ever since, you know, the Mass Effect trilogy wrapped up, I've been looking for like my next big space opera world to get lost in, and Starfield is absolutely the best candidate for that. But maybe, and again, it's an expectations thing, maybe my expectations got a little bit carried away with me, because afterwards I was thinking, like, why are you disappointed? This is exactly what it was always going to be, right? It's a Bethesda game in space. It's Elder Scrolls in space. It's Fallout in space, with all of the systems and all of the things you'd expect to see. Like, why would you expect anything different? And again, I just let my imagination or my hope for something truly groundbreaking, like, to, you know, because this is Bethesda. It's the first thing since the acquisition. They've hyped it to hell. Like, Starfield is going to be this like messianic, you know, presence when it arrives. It's going to be the biggest and best thing. And again, maybe it still will be once we actually dig into it and realize what an amazing game it is. But when they finally showed it, it just kind of felt like, yeah, I guess you're going to run around and shoot people and fly around in space. But like, I didn't see anything that made me go, wow, this is the future of video games.
Yeah, Gary, I'm like 100% with you. I think both me and you land on the exact same place. Because I'm, again, somebody who loves Bethesda Game Studios games. I'm going to play this game, and I'm going to have a blast, right? Like, I played Fallout 4, and I fucking loved Fallout 4. And that was another one that had a bit of a mixed reception, but it was mixed reception on the higher side, right? I think everybody was like, no, this game's great. But people have the expectations of the world, and so they want the world of it. And when it doesn't give you the world, you're just like, okay, cool, it's another Bethesda Game Studios game. My hope for this one is that the places where the game really truly does push the boundaries, shines the most, all that stuff is in the questing and the story. Give me really cool ass side quests, give me cool characters, give me really interesting locations to explore. Let me get fucking lost in the story and the characters and the companions and the factions.
And that's the thing, and that's all the stuff that you can't sell in a 10 minute sizzle, right? Like, that's the stuff that you've really got to get in there,
and that's their bread and butter.
Yeah, when you think about, like, you know, just how big Skyrim was, and this is supposedly bigger in terms of getting lost in a world, and years later people are still loving it, and all the expansions and DLC, like, it's a world you can go and disappear into. And I think the only way we're going to really get a sense of how effective that is in play. It's a really, really hard game to sell, like, just from a few visuals. Again, I didn't think the visuals were great. To me it looked, you know, like a last year, it looked like it could be running on an Xbox One. I wasn't blown away by the visuals, just the character, you know, the facial animations, the character stuff.
The facial animations,
all stuff we've seen
off
before in terms of that level of quality. None of it felt like next level to me.
A couple things I'll throw out to you there too, and that's in that same vein, right? Talking about the characters, you had that you know, traditional Bethesda zoom in when you're getting to dialogue. It is that like deadpan, not deadpan, but like almost like, oh, I don't know if there's life in this person's face that I'm talking to, right? Of like the way that they're looking at you and their eyes kind of just like, oh, I don't, this doesn't necessarily come together and look right. I compare it a little bit to, and this might be a hot take, but it's honest, right? Like, it reminds me of when I played Cyberpunk. And I got into conversations there. And one of the things I really liked about Cyberpunk was I would get into a conversation with an NPC and they would walk around. They would like sway and move. I remember one scene in particular where I'm talking to you. It's like a mob boss type situation. And I'm arguing back and forth with this guy and I'm trying to get something out of him. And as I'm talking to him, he stands up, slowly walks to a drawer, and he pulls a gun out and he starts a gunfight. And I was like, oh shit, I was not expecting this to happen in the middle of me talking to you. I don't know if we're going to get those kind of experiences in Starfield with the way that they're still committing to that locked on. All right, cool. Now you're in dialogue. You're going through, you're clicking the things, and maybe that's not what the game needs to be.
This is
stuff like that I like to see them push.
This is something that technologically and artistically, I think, where video games still have a long way to catch up with movies in terms of like a cinematic flavor. Like when you think about something like a car chase in Uncharted, right? Those sequences feel really cinematic, right? Because they're scripted, they're choreographed, they have all the kind of the action and kinetic energy you'd expect from like a major Hollywood action sequence. And video games are very good at replicating that. But when it's just like a conversation, a dialogue, like the kind that you get so many of in a Bethesda game or a Mass Effect type game, you'll notice that when you watch like two people talking in a movie, they do exactly what you just described, right? They don't just stand there and stare at each other and exchange dialogue. They move around the scene. They interact with things. They do things. Because filmmakers figured out a long time ago that watching two people just like stand and talk at each other and look at each other's faces is really boring, right? Yeah. You want to see actors. You want to see actors do things. You want to see them move around, perform, interact with the space, do other things, right? Because that's what's visually more interesting and it's more human. People typically don't just, unless you're like sitting down to dinner or something, don't just kind of stare at each other and talk. They do other things. They interact with the environment. They live in the space. But when you go into a dialogue scene in Mass Effect or something like Starfield, they just stand there like mannequins and their mouths move. But there's something kind of dead about it. There's no sense that they're actually in that environment. You kind of go into like a locked space where all these characters do is look at each other and talk. And it's not human. It's not realistic. It's not cinematic. It's not visually interesting. And I feel like we need to get to a point where a dialogue scene in a game can play out in a more kinetic, organic, realistic way that is observant of the space that the characters are in and cognizant of the fact that human beings don't just stand and stare at each other. They do things. They look around. They pick something up. It's a little thing, but that's something where we have a long way to go.
Yeah, and then the other thing to throw out there too that I didn't love that I wanted to see more of was the gunplay. The gunplay that we saw in the trailer looked a little bit stiff to me in a way that reminded me of previous Bethesda first person shooter gameplay. And that's the thing that, you know, I think Bethesda would even tell you in Fallout 4 and even 76 and 3 or whatever, that like the gunplay was never perfect, right? The gunplay never was like the driving force. That's why they have vets to make up for that. I really hope that it comes together in this game. I when they first started showing gunplay, I was expecting them honestly to go into some kind of weird scan mode or something that would be almost like a VATS adjacent, and we didn't get that, which, you right. know, I'm fine with that. But if that's the case, like, I need the gunplay to be dope as fuck. You know, I need the gunplay to feel like a genuine first person shooter. But those are all honestly, like, those are probably my big two critiques. I do think the game is gonna be great. You know, I evoked Cyberpunk earlier, and that wasn't to necessarily say that this game is gonna be the next Cyberpunk. I think this game is gonna be better than that. I don't think you're gonna have this game come out and it disappoint everybody or it not run or all that stuff, right? Fingers crossed the game runs well. But I think the game's gonna be good. I just want the game to be fucking I want it to be Bethesda Game Studios. Like, look how much people love Skyrim. Look how much people love Fallout 3. I want that from Bethesda Game Studios.
Look, we all know that Bethesda's had a few major hiccups recently that's dented their reputation for like delivering stone cold bangers, you know, over and over again. But I still feel like, you know, I feel like that in Bethesda we trust is still kind of there, right? Especially on something of this scale. We know they've delayed it. We know they're not just going to ship it like they did Cyberpunk. They really need this on day one to like blow people away. And I'm still of the mind that it's going to do that. The shipbuilding is really cool. I mean, I grew up, you know, playing games like Elite and, you know, the whole idea of it being, you know, I get the No Man's Sky memes. It's very funny, but when I was watching the stream, I was watching it with my friend Adam, who kept saying like, this is No Man's Sky. Like, that's basically what this is. And, you know, I think that's a valid criticism, but I don't think, you know, No Man's Sky is going to go into the same level of like story and character depth that Bethesda is able to go into. I'm still super excited about it. I just don't think that 5 minute or 10 minute, whatever it was that they showed, was particularly compelling. Like, so we're still going like, yeah, it doesn't, we're all making excuses right again. Yeah, but it's going to be great. But like, but let's all admit that I don't think that presentation really blew that many people away.
So going back to the question of who won Summer Game Fest 2022, I do want to give a big shout out to Devolver Digital, because I think Devolver Digital might have had my favorite showcase for what it was, right? It was, I believe, 4 video game announcements. Before I even get into it, Gary, did you check out the Devolver Digital showcase?
No, but I need to go back and I saw some clips from it, and I want to go back and watch the whole thing, because the thing about Devolver is they always do a good presentation, right? Yeah. It's funny. I was just talking to Mike about this the other day. Mike and I went and got burgers the other night, and we were talking about our own takeaways on this. And for me, the style that I want to see in a presentation, honestly, all I need is Nintendo Direct. I don't need anyone in a cool leather jacket standing there in front of a big thing going, "Hey kids, how do you do, fellow kids? Let's go. And this is gonna, here's another banger, and let's bring on this person." And you're like, fuck all that. All I need is the Nintendo guy going, "And now please look at this game. And just show me the fucking game. I don't need all the crazy interstitials." Having said that, the way that Devolver does it is the exception to the rule, because they always find a way to make it fun, to make it interesting. Like, again, previous attempts to do, like, whenever Ubisoft or whatever tried to do it, it's always cringe. It never works. All it becomes is a big fucking unintentional meme factory of all the cringe
moments.
It's like
when Nintendo did the Robot Chicken year.
Right. But Devolver genuinely always do something fun and cool, and it plays into their brand. And Devolver, I think, is one of the more interesting and more fun companies in the business right now, because they have a really fun energy, and they generally they tend to find really, really good games to publish. Like in a very short time, Devolver has developed a brand for itself. It's like just the fact that it's coming from Devolver immediately kind of like ups your interest in it, right?
That's me. I feel like there are certain indie game publishers that people automatically take to, right? Like I know, like, for Greg, that's probably Annapurna. Anytime Annapurna has a game, I think Greg's probably going to take to that kind of game. Devolver is that for me. And it started for me in, I want to say it was 2019, where they led off that year with Ape Out, and then Katana Zero, and then Gato Roboto, and My Friend Pedro. And it was just hit after hit after hit of,
right,
oh, this is my type of game. And looking at the showcase they had here, you know, they had four, it was short, right? They had four games. It was co-hosted by Suda51. I fucking love Suda51. And I didn't get to check out the full showcase, because this is when I was in the airport on the way down to LA. But I was on Twitter keeping up with the announcements. Every single thing they announced here fucking spoke to me, right? It was it was a new game, Angerfoot. We talked about it a bit on the Kind of Funny Games cast that went up this morning, but it is a first-person Hotline Miami, basically. They gave a release date for Cult of the Lamb, which that's a game that I think a lot of people have been looking forward to.
Oh, Andy Cortez has been raving about that.
Yeah, that game looks dope as hell, right? The Plucky Squire is one that, when they announced it, took over my Twitter feed of all the press people that I follow. The Plucky Squire might be one of the coolest announcements for me at the Summer Game Fest. It is I want to say it's a 2D platformer, but it seems like way more than that. They jump between a bunch of different genres. Right now, if you're watching the video version, Barrett has the trailer pulled up, and it starts off as this cool storybook thing showing you different types of gameplay. You know, you're looking at it here, right? It is top-down Zelda-style gameplay, but then you get into some side-scrolling stuff, and then once you jump forward into the trailer, you get you get 3D model characters of them walking around and actually doing platforming in the real world. But as you're watching the trailer, it is a bunch of different types of gameplays. Like, you saw a punch out thing there, you saw like a word puzzle there, right? Like, this is one that seemed to take a lot of people take a lot of people's attention by storm, and is one that I fucking can't wait for.
So I mean, is it too much of a reach to suggest maybe Devolver won Summer Game Fest?
I would put them up there. You know, I think they, honestly, for me, they might have. It's between them and Xbox for me, honestly. I like both shows a lot, but Devolver, every single thing they showed was for sure for me. Like, they had Skate City in there too. Or sorry, Skate Story in there that looked incredible as well. Like, all those games are games that I really want to play when they came out. So they, right. Honestly, I'll say it here. They won for me. Devolver Digital is my winner here.
I just want to make this general point, because you touched on it earlier about the Xbox showcase and how there's always two things at play here. There's the expectation and there's the reality. And Xbox or whoever, Sony, PlayStation, whoever's doing it, can control the reality. But there's only so much they can do to control the expectation. And that's the thing. I thought the Xbox showcase on its face was good. I think if you're an Xbox gamer, and you, especially if you've got Game Pass, you look at that and you think, yeah, the next 12 months is going to be good for me. There's a lot of good stuff coming, particularly on Game Pass. I'm excited about all the stuff that's coming. They checked a lot of boxes. Not every box, but they checked a lot of boxes.
I do have to give a big shout out. I forgot about the State of Play. The State of Play was
part about that too.
A summer game fest, and honestly, that might be the winner for me.
That was considered a good one, right?
People were
very optimistic about that.
It's the same thing for me as Devolver, where every single game at that State of Play spoke to me, and they had the big surprises. They had Resident Evil 4 there. They closed with a dope-ass Final Fantasy 16 trailer, and they have Street Fighter 6 looking gorgeous in that showcase as well. So I take it back. I think State of Play won it for me, but then Devolver Digital is right on there.
Okay, so let me finish my point about the showcase in general, but then I want to go back to State of Play with you. So I thought it was a good thing that Microsoft, the Xbox, focused on next 12 months and all gameplay, you know, to keep cinematics to a minimum. Because that's, you know, the problem with a lot of these showcases is it's something they can be very cinematic heavy, and it's games that are a long way away. So you get excited, but it's like there's no real, it's all sizzle and no steak, right? Mm-hmm. And to focus all on steak and say this is all stuff that's within 12 months, so it's like in an imminent time frame, this is not like years away, and it's all stuff, and we're going to show you what the games actually look like, you know, not just a bunch of bullshit or target renders or cinematics. That I think was all very, very positive. The only problem was by the time they said at the beginning of the showcase, that's what we're going to do. We're going to focus on 12 months and gameplay only. A bunch of people, as we always do, had fallen foul of the rumor mill that had been going around for the last for the previous 48 hours. We were going, oh, we better buckle up because I'm hearing there's going to be some like real megaton announcements and big things at the Xbox showcase. And again, Xbox can only do so much to manage that. People always get carried away with their expectations. That by the time they then show the stuff, people are like, well, but where's all the stuff that I convinced myself you were going to show? And that ends up playing into some of the negative takeaways that people have. I think the one thing that they could have done and should have done is they should have made that announcement about 12 months and focusing on gameplay like a few days ahead of time to like get ahead of like the expectation game running away. Because that's what I saw it happen in the last 48 hours. People got way ahead of themselves in terms of, I tuned in going, wow, what's all this amazing stuff that I'm hearing rumors about? And none of it was there because it ended up being internet bullshit. And that's not Microsoft's fault, but they could have done a better job, I think, of trying to get ahead of that by saying a few days ahead of time or a week ahead of time, not like manage your expectations is not going to be that good, but just know that this is all going to be stuff in the next 12 months and we're going to focus on showing gameplay. So this is going to be a lot of like, you know, cool stuff, but like, don't fucking get yourself carried away like you do. We see you do it at the start of every Nintendo Direct. Oh, it's going to be that, or it's going to be this. And it's not real predictions. It's just like everyone's personal wish list. Nintendo fails to like satisfy everyone's personal wish list, they get shit for it. And we're seeing Microsoft getting shit for it right now.
I do wonder if they felt like they're between a rock and a hard place, because like Nintendo does that shit all the time too. And then they always have like one or two things that isn't within the time frame that they talk about ahead of time. And I wonder if Xbox sees that and they're like, well, even if we do say like ahead of time, you know, we're only going to talk about the next year, like, yeah, that sets expectations to a certain extent, but people are still going to run wild of like, you know, there was rumors that there was like hopes that Wolfenstein 3 was going to be announced and launching this year. You know, and like when they say things like that of like, we're only going to talk about what's coming in the next year, like people are still thinking Hellblade. People are still thinking about games that like didn't show up. I wonder if that was more of just like they were kind of damned if they didn't kind of.
Barrett, you were there last week because you do the XCast with us. When we were doing our predictions, it was all stuff along these lines. Oh, there's going to be a new Banjo. There's going to be a new Killer Instinct. There's going to be like all these amazing reveals. And none of that ended up being true, right? Like
those were predictions, and predictions are, you know, typically very hard to get correct, especially for.
I'm just saying, had we known ahead of time that it was a 12 month time frame and focused on games that were like, you know, far enough along in development to really show gameplay, then I don't think we would have made half of those predictions, right? Because we would have managed our expectations differently.
Here's what I want to do.
The last thing I'll say again, because even if they had set the expectation of the next 12 months, because Nintendo does the thing where they do that, but then they still talk about one or two things after those 12 months, I still think people would have been like, yeah, they'll probably focus on the next 12 months, but then they'll like do a big reveal of something else like Banjo or something like that, even though it's not coming in the next 12 months. Again, it's I don't know. It's a weird one.
But blessing, you're right. Let's go back to State of Play because it was.
Well, before we get there, because we're very late in the show and I probably should throw to ads. I do want to throw to ads. I want to get like final thoughts on this because I do want to hear your definitive State of Play thoughts and then also who won. And then we can quick hit the rest of the show. But for now, let me let everybody out there know about patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can go and get the show ad free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Athletic Greens. I've been using AG1 the last few months because I figured it was well past time I start thinking about vitamins, but I'm usually not the biggest fan of their format. So being able to drink a flavored water is much more up my alley. And I'm a huge fan here of the fact that it doesn't taste super healthy. It kind of has like this mild tropical taste to it that I look forward to every morning. With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. It's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny. This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved only for big businesses to everyone. So upstarts, startups, established businesses, content creators alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. I love how Shopify has the tools and resources that make it easy for any business to succeed, from down the street to across the globe. Our content creator friends use Shopify to manage all their merch sales and stuff. And I recently got Gia a pair of Allbirds from the Allbirds website, which also uses Shopify. So that's an example of big websites using Shopify for their sales. You can gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting on conversion rates, profit margins, and to help you supercharge your knowledge of your sales and your success. You can go to shopify.com/KF Games, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial, and you can get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/KF Games right now. That's shopify.com/KF Games for a free 14-day trial. Shopify.com/KF Games.
Gary Whitta, state of play thoughts.
So you're gonna have. So I did watch it when it came on. I mean, I watched it on like the YouTube, you know, replay. But it it wasn't officially like part of Summer Game Fest, right? It kind of came out like a little bit ahead of time. Oh, was it?
It came out a little bit ahead, but it was the Summer Game Fest.
It came out like ahead of time. It was like the first thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you have to remind me what everything that they showed. But I came here with two thoughts, thinking that was good. And now, and I got to say, even though like I'm an Xbox guy, having seen Xbox's presentation, I thought Sony had the better presentation of the two. But ultimately, all I care about is Stray.
I got a breakdown for you. So Resident Evil 4 was officially announced. Yes, remake. Street Fighter 6 fully
don't
revealed.
Care about that.
Final Fantasy 16 launching summer 2023. Resident Evil Village in development for PSVR 2.
Yeah.
A little bit of PSVR 2, like quick hits. You got Horizon Call of the Mountain, Walking Dead Saints and Sinners, No Man's Sky. And I think that was all the
I'm
PSVR
excited about
2.
PSVR 2.
Stray getting a launch in July with a new trailer.
That's my most anticipated game.
Marvel Spider-Man Miles Morales coming to PC. Both of those coming to PC. Let's see, Rollerdrome, game by Ali Ali World's creator, where you're like skating around and shooting people. Tony Hawk with guns is how it's been described. They showed off the Callisto Protocol, that really scary.
A lot of people are high
game.
On that, right?
Yeah,
it looks really good.
Because it comes from the creators of Dead Space, and it's literally just Dead Space. We've got Season, A Letter to the Future, which looks like a Greg Miller-ass game about feelings. Tunic is coming to PlayStation, and Eternites, which was made by someone who played Persona 5 and was like, oh, this game kicks ass, and then they just went into game development and made a game, and that's Eternites.
Like, not
I thought overall it was I thought overall it was a strong presentation, but again, a lot of it I have to kind of make allowances for. Like, again, I'm not a Final Fantasy guy, but like obviously for the many people that are the next Final Fantasy game, that's a huge deal, and they showed it and it looked good.
This was the best trailer for it yet too.
Yeah.
Same for Street Fighter. I know you're not a Street Fighter person either. Like, this was the big debut gameplay trailer for Street Fighter 6, and it was fucking it was incredible.
But again, that's a multi-platform title, isn't it? That's not exclusive to PlayStation, is it?
Yeah, it's multi-platform, but
yeah.
Even still, like, I feel like that's still that's the kind of game that I think showing it off on the PlayStation showcase really helps build that audience of, okay, I'm going to associate this with PlayStation.
I know, but whenever they show, like, you know, Grand Theft Auto or Modern Warfare or whatever, like, it's nice to have the bragging rights that they show it first on your presentation, but that's not...
For sure.
These showcases are, to some extent, supposed to be like, here's why you need to own a PlayStation. Modern Warfare and Street Fighter 6 don't make those arguments because you can get those on an Xbox as well. It's like, what are you bringing me that you can only get on a PlayStation?
I mean, they did say this was like the third party showcase, and so they kind of built those expectations. But I also, I feel exactly where you're coming from for like a state of play thing. But to the question, what is your favorite, or not even your favorite, who won Summer Game Fest 2022?
Like I said, I don't think there was a clear winner. I don't think there was any one presentation or any one game that emerged as the thing that like everyone was talking about. Like there wasn't like a consensus like, oh, but yeah, come on, that was, you know, that was the thing. I don't think there was. It was, I think I would give the whole thing a B+, like across the board, the entire Summer Game Fest, but there wasn't like one standout thing that clearly emerged as like the winner of the whole thing.
I mean, I think if I had to give the whole thing a grade, I might give it like a C-.
You know, oh,
I
feel wow, like really? That low, huh?
Yeah, I think this year was weaker than what it could have been. And I think part of that was just maybe there just weren't the games to bring it all together. Like, I do think the hypest games were hype, right? Like, and Starfield, very excited for it. Street Fighter 6,
Persona literally coming to Xbox.
Yeah, Persona coming to Xbox. I think that was huge. Deal. Like, there were a lot of good announcements, but I just feel like there weren't enough strong showcases. And like a lot of people, I feel like there weren't... Like, Nintendo wasn't here. I feel like that was sorely missing from this whole thing. Like, the PlayStation first-party stuff, I know it's been gone for a while, but even that, I don't know, I feel like that could have added to a lot more hype, even though we did get the Last of Us remake, but even that, like, didn't hit the way that I even think they thought it was going to hit. So I don't know.
Like, no, because again, it's just, I think it looks cool, but it's, you know, and I like the remaster trend. I think it's really cool, but, like, I don't know, with Last of Us, it's not even that old, right? We just had Last of Us 2. They already did a PS4 remaster of it. I know what they're doing now is more ground up, but again, a lot of the stuff that I read after the fact, people were just kind of underwhelmed by it. Like, it doesn't look that much better. Yeah, it looks better, but like not...
I will say, I watched the Digital Foundry video that they put up today. Mm. They finally did their deep dive analysis. Watching that video actually has me like very excited for it because...
Okay, I should watch it. I like the Digital Foundry stuff. I should watch that.
It looks like they went in and did their damn thing for that remake. And so like it... Technically, I think it's going to be impressive, but it's the thing of, you know, Last of Us isn't that old. You're playing the same game again. It is that. And I do think for me, a game of the show probably is Street Fighter 6. And I associate that right now
with State of Play. I'm kind of interested in that adventure mode, whatever that is.
I mean, I think if you have interest in Street Fighter, I think that adventure mode might be what gets you in because that seems like it's going to be geared toward newer players to get in, learn the mechanics, and experience the game in a more organic way, the way you would experience more of a 3D action game, get into fights naturally and all that stuff. But Gary, let's transition. It's story number two because that was story number one.
Story number two, and it's
that was
it's
the entire 56 show.
56 episodes. We spent like an hour on the first minutes story. Into the episode.
We have 2 minutes left on this show, Gary.
Barrett is the only shows that I'm on.
It's only you, Gary.
It's only shows that you're on, Gary.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I'm sorry.
It means you're a great conversator, right? We like talking to you. Story number two, Assassin's Creed Valhalla Assassin's Creed Valhalla updates to add roguelite mode and more. This is Steve Watts at GameSpot. The Assassin's Creed series turns 15 years old this year, and Ubisoft is marking the occasion with a number of special events and content drops. The festivities include new activities in Assassin's Creed Valhalla, a free trial for Origins, and weekly celebrations through a dedicated site. To start, Valhalla is getting a second year of post-launch content. You'll be able to play a roguelite mode called the Forgotten Saga with a free update this summer. Then, at the end of the year, Ubisoft promises one last chapter in the Eivor Saga, which will be added as a free update for all players. For those who just want to learn more about Viking history, the Valhalla Discovery Tour is now available as a standalone experience across all platforms, and Ubisoft has opened its curriculum guide for classrooms. Ubisoft also formally announced the 60fps update for Assassin's Creed Origins on PS5 and Xbox Series X. Even if you don't own Origins, you can try it out with a free weekend from June 16th to the 20th. Finally, Ubisoft has set up a dedicated anniversary site, Assassin's Creed 15, where it'll be offering content and rewards for different games each week. For this first volley, it's offering Assassin's Creed Origins tattoos and a naval pack in Valhalla. During the anniversary stream, Ubisoft also promised details on the future of the franchise coming in September. And that seemed like it was the biggest thing, the fact that a lot of people were going into this event thinking that you're going to see the future of Assassin's Creed, maybe the next game, maybe whatever Assassin's Creed Infinite is going to be. Turns out you're going to get that info later in September, which I guess is exciting. Like, Gary, I forget if you're an Assassin's Creed person.
I'm not an Assassin's Creed person, but I do live with one. My wife loves Assassin's Creed. I think she's got like something like 500 hours in Odyssey. And probably at least half that, if not more, in Valhalla. She really liked both of those games. She played some Origins as well, but like Odyssey's her favorite. And she liked Valhalla as well. I think for people that are really into Assassin's Creed, and clearly there are, you know, many, many of them, it's one of Ubisoft's biggest names. This seems like a really, if I was really into Assassin's Creed, I'd probably be happy with this, right? There's a bunch of stuff, like a whole new story chapter. This roguelike mode seems interesting. They've added a bunch. They're really supporting this game.
I think it's a little bit of like candy and medicine, where it's like, oh, here's a bunch of new content that you may or may not, you know, fuck with, right? Like cool cosmetics, a weekly content drop, that kind of thing. And then you're not going to hear anymore until September. Yeah. I think that was very much like a pain in the gut for a lot of people.
That felt like
the way they hyped it up, it felt like it was going to be.
Yesterday, where Dragon's Dogma was like, we'll have a video later.
Yeah, but hey, September, you're going to get all the answers you want. Maybe some you don't want, but hey, we'll see.
Wait, so in September, what's going to happen? Are they going to give us a sense of what Assassin's Creed Infinity is going to be or what?
I mean, you might just get another countdown and they'll say, hey, come back in April for the next.
I feel like people are very, very nervous about Assassin's Creed Infinity. Like,
honestly.
It could go very sideways, couldn't it?
It's not going to be good.
Let's hop into story number three. What is happening with God of War? At Corey Barlog this morning, returned to Twitter, which is very exciting, but he tweeted a tweet from David Jaffe, who tweeted out, remember that Sony insider pal who said God of War Ragnarok 2022 was still on? Well, another Sony insider pal texted me today saying it's no longer locked in and the release is TBD. Maybe 2022, maybe not. So fuck if I know. 50-50 at this point. Man, when are they going to announce that date? Corey Barlog quote tweeted that tweet and said, wait, what? Question mark with a gif of Kratos walking out of the shadows, which could mean anything. But you know, I think the idea that Corey Barlog is acknowledging it,
he does this follow up tweet of Ryan Reynolds doing like the little smirky face too.
It's a show of confidence from him, which I hope doesn't backfire. I hope this game doesn't delay to 2023.
The fact that he's back on Twitter too is very interesting.
Yeah,
because he kind of
did he take a break or something?
Yeah, it was like very like subtly, like I think it might have been like Destin Legarry or someone who noticed it of like, yo, where's Corey Barlog? And
now that you mention it, because I follow Corey, he's usually quite busy on this Twitter. Point.
So the fact that he's coming back,
the rumor is later this, was it later this month or later this summer for when they drop the Ragnarok
details? I don't know, man. I, like, there's so many fucking rumors at this
point. So many rumors. Like, we're going to get a Nintendo Direct
apparently. I just don't care anymore.
That's my thing with God of War Ragnarok is I don't give a fuck anymore, man. Give me the date when you give me the date.
If you had to go out on a limb right now and plant your flag, is God of War 2 coming out this year or next?
This year.
You think so? You're confident in that?
Yeah, I think, you know, the rumors, the reports, Corey Barlog being on Twitter, I think it all is lining up. I think we'll see a release date soon for it. Hopefully. That's where I'm at. What about you? Do you think it's coming out this year?
Is it telling that they haven't announced it yet? Like a bunch of other games that have come that would be expected. Here's the thing. To come out this year, it can't be any later than like Thanksgiving's kind of the cutoff, right? Like the big holiday games usually ship. New Modern Warfare always comes out in October. Like November's about as late as you can go. You can't ship like a holiday game in December. So I don't know. Is it telling that they haven't already? Like if they knew they could do it, why not announce the date?
Because God of War 2018's release date wasn't announced until 4 months before that game came out.
Okay. Yeah, PlayStation, they have a tendency to do that. They'll announce the release date way closer to the actual game coming out. And now, you know, Starfield being delayed out of November, I think leaves that space and room to where you're not competing with them if the game comes out in November.
I mean, all the more reason to hit that date, right? Because I think you can just own that.
Own Black Friday and all that stuff.
Does Xbox have like a big, now that Starfield's out of the zone, does Xbox have a big holiday?
Nope.
What's their holiday banger? I don't think they have one, right?
No, I don't think so. Probably the stuff coming to Game Pass pretty much is their holiday plan.
So we'll Sony, that. And then who knows what Nintendo's going to drop between now and then. They usually come in with a wild card, right?
Yeah, I mean, Pokemon is November, so they're going to have that fill that slot. And then who knows when Bayonetta 3 drops, Splatoon 3. Like, we need answers on that. And I'm sure if they have a Nintendo Direct, they'll have like maybe one or two more medium tier games that they'll drop in that quarter.
Right.
Story number four is a quick shout out. I was going to do kind of a preview roundup sort of deal with Plague Tale Requiem because IGN got the exclusive preview on that one that they dropped today. I just want to give a shout out. Check it out. Go give them the click. It was written by Simon Cardi at IGN. And that game sounds pretty good. It sounds like they're... go for it.
I found out that I can actually... There was a thing that I didn't realize that I could talk about. It turns out I can. I actually got to play some of the new Plague Tale. Because it's an official selection for this year's Tribeca Festival games competition, and I got to play all of the games in that because I'm a judge in the for the game for the Tribeca.
Wait, are you sure you can talk about this?
Yeah, they confirmed it yesterday. I can't say anything else other than because what the games are is already like you can go to the Tribeca Festival website right now and it shows you what the games are. It's like it's Plague Tale Requiem, As Dusk Falls, American Arcadia, Thirsty Suitors, and a bunch of other games. There's like 9 in total. And I'm me, Kiki Wolfkill, and NK Jemison are the judges for the game contest this year, and so I got to play all of those games. And
can you tell us some details? Like, did you like them?
I think that's the part I'm not allowed to say.
Oh, dang it, dang it. Oh man, I really want to hear about Plague Tale.
There were some really good ones. Like there were because you don't play the whole game; you play like a piece of it that they send you. They send you like a chapter or a chunk that they think is representative of it for adjudication. And so I got to play like a nice little slice of all these different games, and there was at least 3 games out of them that I'm like super excited for them to come out now because I think they're great.
I mean, I'll take that. I like that. I like that scoop. Story number 5, there's no legal issues with Fei Long in Street Fighter 6, Capcom insists. I'm not going to read through the whole thing. I was pulling from Martin Robinson at Eurogamer. The gist of it is that Fei Long has been missing from Street Fighter since Street Fighter 4, and the idea there for people has been that apparently the Bruce Lee estate has been kind of cagey about depictions of Bruce Lee that are done in a more comedic tone as opposed to like a more honorable tone. They want any depiction to be more honorable. There was a composer on Street Fighter that was saying that, oh, you might not see Fei Long in future Street Fighters for that reason. Street Fighter officially came out and said no. Like, that it doesn't hold any bearing on how if not Fei Long actually lands in Street Fighter 6 eventually. But they're not confirming that Fei Long is in Street Fighter 6 because that's a secret. And so there you have it. And I believe them, right? Like, Liu Kang is still in Mortal Kombat. They're not going to do anything about that. Like, Law is still going to be in Tekken. I don't think Fei Long would be taken out of Street Fighter for that reason. And then let's round out with story number 6. Elden Ring continues to dominate. This is Brendan Sinclair at GamesIndustry.biz. We got our top 10 of the NPD best-selling games for the month of May. I'll just go from 10 to 1, right? So at number 10, you got Pokemon Legends Arceus. At number 9, Gran Turismo 7. You got Mario Kart 8 above that. Call of Duty Vanguard above that. Kirby and the Forgotten Land above that. At number 5, MLB The Show 22. Number 4, Evil Dead The Game. At number 3, Nintendo Switch Sports. At number 2, LEGO Star Wars The Skywalker Saga. Then at number 1, Elden Ring on top. That game is selling gangbusters. It can't be stopped. Just like the
bosses.
What a
hugely successful game that has been commercially, creatively. I mean, I can't remember a time, maybe God of War a few years ago. I can't remember a time, and again, correct me if you think I'm wrong here, when at this point in the year, I mean, even when did Elden Ring come out? February?
February.
In February, within a couple of weeks of it coming out, I was saying, and again, even though it's not my cup of tea, just as an observer that, you know, knows a thing or two about video games, I'm looking at that game and the way people are reacting to it and going, this is as nailed on to sweep all the Game of the Year awards at the end of the year as any game has ever been. Like, well, don't you think it's going to run the table, right, when it comes to Game of the Year?
Depending on if Ragnarok comes out this year, I think that's still yet to be determined. And God of War 2018 did have Red Dead Redemption 2 going up against it.
God of War had Red Dead. Elden Ring does seemingly have God of War Ragnarok, but I don't know if it's going to have the juice. Like, I don't know if God of War is going to have the juice.
We'll see, just because, especially if Ragnarok's coming out closer to the Game Awards.
That's
going to be fresher in people's minds. It's also just going to be more accessible to people who, like, there were a lot of people like me who haven't played or weren't super into Souls games that played Elden Ring, really loved their time with like Elden Ring, but I still think God of War has that. Like,
here's the thing.
I think even Ragnarok would have its work cut out for it, given how much goodwill Elden Ring's built up within the community. I mean, people just fucking love that game.
I'm thinking about games industry folks, journalists and stuff who actually like vote on
the only thing I can think of is like if an It Takes Two type surprise comes out between now and then, right? But that's really unlikely, I think.
I think that's unlikely. I don't think anything is going to have the level of reception of Elden Ring. I don't believe in the recency thing for like a game coming out in November and then getting Game of the Year. I feel like that's way less common than more common. Like Red Dead didn't have that, and that came out way closer to Game of the Year than God of War. And like usually Game of the Year stuff is, I I feel like the trend tends to be there are spring titles that have had more time to sit in our minds that we are like, oh, yeah, man, we love these.
I think the thing that Red Dead had going against it, though, is because of how nitty gritty that game is in a very different way from Souls games, but like is still on like the level of what Souls games do in the nitty grittiness of like what they are. I think God of War is just like what it is now and what it's defined as now, especially with 2018, is a little more palatable for a lot of people, especially in the journalistic kind of sphere where people
that's are the other thing on. Is I think, you know, in terms of the audience that are getting their hands on Elden Ring, I think it is, the audience is so wide. That game is the highest selling game that is not like a Call of Duty in a very long time. And I think that's going to speak to the amount of people, which is
amazing when you think about. I get that it's so critically liked, right? People that like Elden Ring really love it. And obviously, there are criticisms of it, but people generally fucking love Elden Ring. Mm-hmm. When you think about how many copies it sold, and it is a staggering number, I actually find that a little bit surprising considering how hardcore and unforgiving it is. Like, that's not a game for casuals. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh,
a game that is that dialed into a particular kind of like try-hard, sweaty player base, I'm actually surprised that it has as much broad appeal that it does. I wonder if it sold a lot of copies to people that like, they bought it, but then they played it for like a week and said, fuck this, because it's just too hard. I don't know.
Here's what I would say regarding the November thing. I bet God of War Ragnarok comes out in November, but I worry that it might not make it for Game Awards because of the cutoff. I think it might end up in that weird situation.
So
it's a dumb cutoff, right? But I think I could see it ending up in that place where it comes out second or third week of November. Reviewers haven't had enough time to get their hands on it. And for that reason, it's either the thing of the conversation.
Yeah, it's the Fallen Order problem, right?
It's either the Fallen Order problem or there was another game that came out like
Cyberpunk.
Cyberpunk, but like Cyberpunk wasn't gonna get
no,
it.
No, I know.
Like,
but
Forza was the one I was thinking of, right? Where if people were like, where the fuck is Forza Horizon in the Game Awards? Because it was in sports, but it wasn't Game of the Year. And the argument was like, yo, not enough. That game came out at that cutoff where like reviewers had it, but like general people didn't have it. People couldn't.
I don't want to have to return to this subject in detail, but I really think Jeff should consider moving the window when they do it, because it's a big problem right now. Where like, it's a lot of the big AAA games, which sometimes often are, you know, also Game of the Year, not necessarily like Modern Warfare or whatever, like just the big sellers, but like, you know, a God of War Ragnarok or a Red Dead or, you know, or in this case, you know, Fallen Order, or in this case, maybe the new God of War games that are coming
Smash
out.
Ultimate, I think, was in that
games that are coming out in November because they're expected to like sell a lot over the holiday period, in part because they are absolute stone cold banger games. Having a problem getting into that year's consideration for Game Awards just because that's the window, because Jeff wants to put it on air on December. To me, it's just fucking weird. Like, there's a reason why the Oscars and the big serious award shows are in February, because the calendar year is the calendar year. Like, when they say Game of the Year, like, what are you talking about? Like, it's not Game of the Year. It's like, it's the game between like this October and that October. It's just weird.
Yeah, I would almost say, like, if you're going to keep it there, just change it from Game of the Year to just Best Game or something along those lines, because I don't know. It's not representative, and I think it does color it. But, Gary, I'm very excited to see how all that lands toward the end of the year, Game Awards season. But Game Awards season is so far away. If I want to know what's coming out to Mom and Grop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software on each and every platform, as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily show hosts each and every weekday.
Out today, we got Crazy Chicken Extreme for PS5 and PS4, Neo Dori Forever for PC, The Hand of Merlin for PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X, Xbox One, and Switch, Grapple Gloves have come to Fortnite, which I think are the Spider-Man type gloves where you're swinging and swinging. And then one new date for you, Overwatch.
Well, they are like the Spider-Man, but it's Indiana Jones version, okay, Bless?
Oh, so it's like the whip. Wait, Indiana Jones doesn't have a glove?
I don't know, man. I don't know. But they use Indiana Jones to show it off in whatever fucking trailer they put up.
Fortnite is weird. I love it. New date for you. Overwatch tweeted out this morning that the Overwatch 2 beta begins June 28th. That is happening on PC and on console. It'll include the Junker Queen and the Junker Queen map, or is Junker Queen a character? It'll include that and a new map, and then signups and more details are coming on June 16th. And so there you have it.
Overwatch, a lot of people still saying, what is the point of this game? Like, what have you actually done other than add a 2? You know,
I mean, at least it's free to play, right? So it's like, they could have called it Overwatch the new expansion or some shit, and it would have been better.
I don't know if Blizzard and free to play is a combination that necessarily gets me very excited these days.
Yeah, I feel that.
Have you fucking seen some of this Diablo Immortal stuff? Unbelievable. The way the monetization works in that game, like it shouldn't be legal. It's fucking shocking.
Gary, we're toward the end of the show, and I do, even though we're going long, we do have one of them rotating segments, a very special segment. It is a message from Kenny Ballou. Kenny Blue writes in and says, today, Tuesday, June 14th, 2022, is the 1200th episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily. Congratulations. I'll keep this as short as I forgot to do this until last minute. Whoops. And I know the five-year anniversary is coming up on Thursday. I think the biggest news by far was the first time the show was hosted together last Thursday, the first in-person show since March 13th, 2020, breaking a streak of 550 shows. Thank goodness. I can't wait for the new studio. I know you guys must be so ready. There have been a total of 131 hosts for the show. For the regulars, the rankings are as follows. Greg with 696 shows. That's 39 since the last 100 show. Tim with 428 shows. That's plus 42. Me, Blessing, with 347 shows. That's plus 45. Gary with 186 shows. That is plus 19. And Gary, you are the new number 4 on the list for the most hosted
shows. Wow. And I'm not even a host.
Yeah, I mean,
I've never actually hosted. I've never been in like the captain's the leading chair. Seat. And I don't want to be because I don't.
I was gonna say, do you want to try sometime?
No, I wouldn't want to do it. Yeah, you can get the doc template. No.
That's fair enough. It is taxing reading through all this shit, and like half the time you don't even know what you're reading. So you come out and you're like, what did I just say? It's a tough job.
Yeah.
And the number 5 is Andrea Renee, still with 173 shows. And then following that is Imran, Jared, Fran, Andy, and Janet. For the guests, Khalif and Paris have each hosted 6 episodes. Anthony Gallegos, Chassie Vicencio, Cheeks Jr., Belinda, Mike Hardy, and the list goes on. They've hosted 3 times. I got to jump forward because there's a lot of info here. Hosting combos, Greg and Tim. Still number 1, 169 shows. Greg and Gary, number 2, 124 shows. And you guys are the new number 2, actually.
Wait, sorry, what was number 1?
Number 1 was Greg and Tim.
Oh, yeah, I'm never gonna beat that.
I mean, you're really close. You're at 124 shows. They're at 169. So you just got to separate them.
You just got to get Tim sick for a while and then, you know, just catch up, Gary.
Interesting.
Behind that.
When you put it like that, I didn't realize I'd done that many.
You're ubiquitous on the show. Like, you are, like... You're number 4, right? Like right there with me, Greg, and Tim. And so, yeah, no, you're up there. And then at number 4, there's Tim and number 3, Greg and Andrea with 121 shows. And of course, you just overtook them. And then at number 4, it's me and Tim with 115. Number 5, Greg and me with 80 shows. The show is ran by one of the hosts who reads the Roper Report, segment transitions, etc. The rankings for this is Greg at number 1, 670 shows total. That is plus 37 since episode 1100. I'm at number 2 with 277 shows. That is plus 40 since 1100. Tim with 93 shows. Andrea with 30 shows. And under that is Imran with 29 shows. For some advanced metrics, the rankings for percentage of shows run to shows hosted is Greg with 96.3% of the shows he's been on hosted, me with 79.8% with the shows I've been on hosted, Tamor with 64.9%, Nick Scarpino with 50%, and then at number 5, Snowbike Mike with 46.7% of the shows.
The thing we were trying to figure out the other day was what are the still kind of undone combos, like who hasn't hosted with who, because like because I was thinking this other, like I've hosted with almost everyone but never with Andy, never with Nick.
Only hosted 2 episodes.
Yeah, he's right, only right, been right. on 2 episodes, so that's why he's got a 50%.
I want to do one with Andy though.
I feel we can make that happen show. I can look on the calendar and see if make that work. And then rankings for whoever has done the sound effects for the show, right? The Roper Report jingle, Baker's Dozen, etc. Kevin is still number 1 with 849 shows. That's plus 64 since last time. Barrett, a strong number 2, 229 shows. That's plus 36. And then following is Cool Greg, Andy, Joey, Greg Miller Industries, and then a combo of Kevin and Andy one time. There have now been a total of 553 shows since the last show in the studio, sad face. That means that 46% of all the Kind of Funny Games Daily episodes have not been done at the studio. 46%. We've been at home for that long.
I've been working more at home than I have at the studio.
Jesus.
I got to tell you, when I saw Kevin the other night, because we went out and got me, Kevin and Mike went and got some burgers, and Kevin was telling me about the studio and like how it's progressing, and I'm very excited for you guys to get back into that new space, and I'm excited to come and like be an actual kind of host. I miss hosting at the desk, you know, like it's great. We've made it work, but it's not the same. Come on.
We'll get there. Hopefully 2022 at some point. Congratulations. This is still Kenny Blue. Congratulations on making it to 1,200 episodes in 5 years. I know how much I personally look forward to seeing the Patreon notification that the show is posted every day. Keep up the great work. Heart emoji. Kenny Blue. Kenny, you know we appreciate you. Thank you so much for your write-up. If you're listening and you want to get some more nitty-gritty details on that or go back and look at it yourself, I'm sure Kenny will post that on the Reddit for you to see. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong, where you write in, let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong, so we can correct it for those watching later on YouTube and listening later on podcast services around the globe. Nana writes in and says, Capcom made it clear before the showcase that they're only going to talk about already announced games. We know, like, that doesn't discount that it was a boring time talking about the games they already announced, but fair enough. Kebab says, Jason can't be in Dead by Daylight because he's from Friday the 13th.
Mm.
Charles Jacobson says, Resident Evil Resistance, included with RE3, was 1v3. Reverse is more regular third-person shooter with iconic RE characters. Yeah, I actually pulled up the Steam page. I meant to read it. I totally forgot about that. But yeah, Reverse is more of just a deathmatch type of deal. Nano says, Junker Queen is the new character, which I appreciate. And that's it.
Does she have a name, or do they just call her Junker Queen?
I forget. Like, the trailer was at a recent thing. I think it was at Xbox, and I just, like, forgot all of it. It was a chaotic time. But I think she might just be called Junker Queen, because they just call her Junker Queen in the tweet.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's hosts for Kind of Funny Games Daily are me and Janet Garcia. If you're watching this live on Twitch right now, after this, it's some PlayStation Plus Premium hanging out with me and Barrett. We're going to scroll through, see what games are on there, and fucking play around with that thing. If you want to catch that stream later, you can subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. Remember, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.